This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast, where we chat all things creepy, cannabis, true crime, paranormal, and weird. I'm Madeline.
I'm Rachel.
In our last recording, we went on about coming back after a long break, but in hindsight, we will not be posting that first.
That's so truly what I was thinking about. And I'm truly considering maybe just for that video, clipping out the entire lengthy front. Throwing on our ad for our product that we're promoting and carrying on with our life.
It's fine.
That's where
we'll leave it. It's better that way.
If you guys want to know about our lives, go to the next video. We're not going to tell you now because we simply can't. Instead, we're just going to immediately start telling you about the strain. It's our only option. Or are we not?
We are.
We are.
However, I failed to plan anything before we hit record. So
how about you just tell us about it, and then I'll smoke it while you tell me the story, and then I'll just tell you guys how I feel.
That seems great.
Okay, great.
So it's called Mule Fuel.
Okay.
It is also 36%.
So I'll do one hit. I'll do one hit. A wee baby hit. Yeah. Like a wee baby.
Good amount of myrcene, indica leaning.
So I'm gonna be in the sheets, not doing anything fun. I'm gonna be sleeping in them.
Probably. You don't have to.
You know, I'm thinking that you guys should just decide for yourselves if you want to experience 36% or whatever it was. What was it, 33?
36.
No, that's nearly 40. That's nearly half. I'm set on that. That's not helping anybody's tolerance break. I'll just stay here and imagine what it's like.
Yeah.
And what's it called again?
Mule Fuel.
I really wanted to say Moscow Mule.
That would probably pair well with it.
Mule Fuel. I will try it someday.
I did not look up anything else about it or the strain, so.
It's fine. Look, it's Halloween about month. That. It's Halloween month. The one thing I will tell you that we said in the last one is it. Cannabis just became legal in our state, okay? Yeah. We've just been busy. Mm-hmm. And by we, I mean Maddie. She's been busy. You know? But we're here now.
It's been stressful.
And that's all that matters.
And we are here.
Yeah. And Maddie is going to have probably a little bit of a mental breakdown because the last episode we recorded was foul. And then this one is pretty foul. And I'm also realizing that both feature heavily ear trauma.
Not ear trauma.
Yes, ear trauma is a thing that is occurring. So we're just going to let you guys experience this with us. And my lisp. I said Now I'm laughing like I smoke a pack a day for the last 50 years. I'm fucking, please tell the story for the love of God. I can't take it anymore.
Okay. Today we are going to be discussing the Hi-Fi Murders.
Hi-Fi Murders.
So we're just going to dive right in. Dale Selby Pierre was born on January 20th, 1953 in Trinidad and Tobago. Tobago.
Let's go. Topanga, Tobago.
Not starting off well.
Bro, I'm stone cold sober. What's
it's
happening?
Not starting off well. Okay.
What's happening?
Dale describes his relationship.
What we do know is that there was a man named Dale. For sure. He definitely had a name.
Yeah, he did. Okay.
Give me that bong. I can't live like this. We need to calm down. Give me that.
Okay.
Give me this baby one.
Everything's fine.
I've also always wanted to use it. I got this for Maddie for her birthday, and it was like the first gift I ever got. Just be careful because
the bowl is broken on the bottom.
That.
So just be weary.
I see.
Of that. All right. So, excuse me. So, he described his relationship with his mother, saying, quote, "I remember my mother, you know, giving me a beating. I remember my mother throwing a rager. After she beat me, she hadn't worked up a rage enough to beat me again. I remember thinking, God, my head hurt."
He's real scattered, that one.
Mm-hmm.
So his mom was a raging bitch.
Yes.
That beat him?
Yes.
Got it.
Sounds
like my life. My mom's not a bitch, but she did lay me out a time or two.
Over time, he learned to have basically no emotional response to anything, although this appeared to be specific to his interactions with his mother, I can imagine. I say this because Pierre admitted to having his own violent outbursts as a child. In one case, mm-hmm. Pierre described a situation with a man named Christoph.
Saying, not Christoph. Not motherfucking Christoph.
"I had some fights. There's the guy. His name was Christoph. I hit him with a stone. Even as I hit him on the head, I opened him and he was bleeding. Pretty big gash on his head, too. I remember I was in such a rage," adding that he later told his victim, "That serves you right."
He's like a very scatterbrained person. Like, even the way he articulates his sentences is confusing to me.
Yeah. On another occasion, after a classmate told him to shut up, he flew into a rage, grabbed a cricket bat, and beat the kid. Saying, "I remember coming back up behind him and took a swing, almost brained him."
Not brained him.
"I told him next time, sucker, I ain't gonna miss." Okay, well, it sounds like
you didn't miss
is the thing.
It sounds, in fact, like you hit him square in the head and almost brained him.
So he was described as a loner who was quiet and fairly intelligent. That tracks. He does not have a lot of friends, possibly with borderline personality disorder. I would definitely imagine so. Something.
Me sitting over here with bipolar, just waiting for the day I snap and just murder a bunch of people.
No. It's
I don't have the cardio to murder people.
No.
So, you're safe.
You're safe. When he was 19, he and his family migrated to New York City, and he joined the United States Air Force. After being transferred to Hill Air Force Base in 1973, he met fellow airman William Andrews. It was at this time that he and Andrews, on a random Saturday in April of 1974, yet again the 70s.
The 70s were a fucking time, man.
Made the decision to rob the local hi-fi store, which resulted in one of the most gruesome cases in the state of Utah.
Poor Utah.
So.
You don't hear about that much. It is correct. Is Utah the state that has the really high Mormon population?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that that's relevant. It just, you know, facts that popped into my head.
Yeah. What is that one place?
Like Salt Lake City?
Yeah.
Is that where it is? Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was hoping we were on the same wavelength, but I wasn't sure.
Okay. So Andrews described the moment that they made the plan to rob the hi-fi, and he said, "I remember it was on a Saturday afternoon. The Saturday afternoon before the crime took place, we got to rapping about robberies and crime and all this stuff."
No, did you say rapping?
Well, that's what he said.
They got to rapping. Rappin'. They got to beatboxing.
Rapping.
Oh, not even with the G. They're rapping.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Apostrophe.
"The subject of stereos might have come into play because we were sitting there listening to the stereo, and we had all been to the hi-fi shop before looking at stereo equipment, so we all knew this store, and we knew it had a lot of good stuff in it," he said.
Okay.
So Pierre went out and rented the storage unit on the same Saturday afternoon, and we planned that Monday morning going there at closing time. Throw down on everybody, tie them up, and take the equipment.
Okay.
He then also revealed that the group had discussed in advance whether or not they planned to kill the witnesses at the store. He said, "In my mind, I wasn't. I hadn't concluded that the witness should be killed."
Oh, okay. Judge, jury, and executioner hasn't decided that it needed to happen yet.
"I hadn't made that conclusion yet," he said. But apparently somebody in the group had made that conclusion. Andrews described Pierre as very irrational with very little self-control, and he lets his anger get the best of him.
I see that.
Great. With a plan in place, the two decided to put that plan into action on the evening of April 22nd, 1974, just before closing. At the time of the robbery, there were two employees in the store, Michelle Ansley. So, Michelle Ashley.
Listen, you're doing your best.
Michelle Ansley was 19. That's fucked up. And had begun working for them 1 week prior.
It makes me, like, so sick to my stomach how, like, Cindy from the other episode we did had, like, just moved to town right before. Mm-hmm. This girl just got a job right before. Like, mm-hmm. if literally one thing had gone different.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. Also working there was 20-year-old Stanley Walker. Both victims were immediately taken hostage. Both men took the victims to the basement of the store where they bound them before returning upstairs to rob the store. Later, a 16-year-old boy named Courtney Nasbit entered the store to thank Stanley for helping him with an errand and was also taken hostage and tied up in the basement with Stanley and Michelle. Later that evening, Warren Walker, Stanley's 43-year-old father, was worried that his son had not returned home, so he arrived at the store and was also taken hostage at this point.
I just don't know what these guys, like, have on them. They're just taking hostages left and right.
Like, how?
I guess, obviously a weapon, but, like...
Yeah, but come on.
Yeah.
At this point, Michelle began begging and crying, likely realizing how severe the situation was now that an additional hostage had been taken.
Yeah, now, like, I feel like they're all pretty much young kids, too, and now, like, I know Stanley's 20, but
yeah,
I feel like seeing, like, a real adult, mm-hmm, like, the, mm-hmm. one of the kids' dads
mm-hmm.
is taken hostage, I'd be freaking out.
Mm-hmm. So, after they were taken to the basement, Pierre ordered Andrews to go out into their van and bring him back something. So Andrews returned with a bottle in a brown paper bag from which Pierre poured a cup of blue liquid. Mm. Pierre ordered Oren to administer the liquid to the other hostages, but he refused and was bound, gagged, and left face down on the basement floor. Just then, Carol, Courtney's 52-year-old mother, entered the store looking for her son. She was also taken to the basement, bound, and placed next to her son.
I'm wondering if they were like, oh yeah, they're right downstairs, and then waited for them to get down there and jumped them. Like, how the fuck did they subdue
all these people?
What is it? Five people now. It's five people.
Mm-hmm. So they propped each of the victims into sitting positions and forced them to drink the liquid, telling them it was vodka laced with sleeping pills. Rather, it was an industrial drain cleaner.
Oh.
Whose active ingredient was sodium hydroxide.
You can't see it, but I'm making a face because I know what that does.
The moment it touches their lips, you get blisters. It burns their tongues, throats, and peels away the flesh around their mouth.
That sounds delightful.
So, Michelle was still begging for her life, was not forced to drink the drain cleaner. They tied the duct tapes. They tried to duct tape the hostage's mouth shut to hold quantities of drain cleaner in and to silence their screams, but pus oozing from the blisters prevented the adhesive from sticking.
Mm-hmm. That tracks. So their skin was sloshing off to the point that they couldn't even duct tape their mouths, is what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to stop complaining about the minor inconveniences of my day. Like, the fact that, like, you know, my favorite shows skip a weekly episode. That does it for me, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So Oren was the last one to be given the drain cleaner, but he allowed it to pour out of his mouth and then fake the convulsions and screams of his son and fellow hostages.
Oh, that's awful. I can't even imagine. I keep forgetting that their kids are there.
Pierre became angry because the deaths were taking too long and were too loud and messy, so he shot Carol and Courtney in the back of their heads.
Jesus.
Pierre then shot Oren but missed, and then he fatally shot Stan Walker before again shooting at Oren, this time striking him in the back of the head. Pierre then took Michelle to the far corner of the basement, forced her at gunpoint to remove her clothes, and then repeatedly raped her while Andrews watched, and then when he was done, he dragged her back to the other hostages, threw her on her face and fatally shot her in the back of the head. It was noted in one article that I read that Michelle's last words were, "I am too young to die."
I fucking hate people. Sometimes that's all I can say. So they shot everybody. They killed. They shot the mother and son. They shot the father and son. They just shot her in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
They noted that Oren was still alive, so Pierre mounted him, wrapped a wire around his throat, and tried to strangle him. When this failed, they inserted a ballpoint pen into his ear.
No.
And stomped on it until it punctured his eardrum, and went into his throat.
This sounds like a Freddy versus Jason movie.
Yeah.
How do you... from the ear through the throat. You know what? I don't need to know. Carry on.
They then went upstairs and finished loading equipment into their van and left.
Why? Okay. So you weren't there to rob the place then. You were there to murder people.
100%.
Because none of that they were all tied up in the basement.
None of that was
when the new people came in, you could have also just tied them up in the basement.
Yeah.
Okay.
The victims were discovered 4 hours later when Oren's wife and other son came to the store looking for them.
At least they didn't come there while they were there, I guess.
Yeah, they called 911. Stan, Walker, and Michelle were already dead, but Carol lived long enough to be loaded into the ambulance, but was then pronounced dead when she arrived at the hospital.
Oh, fuck.
Courtney was not expected to live, but he did survive with severe irreparable brain damage and required hospitalization for 266 days before being released. Despite his severe injuries, Oren Walker survived, although with extensive burns to his stomach and esophagus. Hours after the news of the crime broke, an Air Force officer called the Ogden police and told them that Andrews had confided in him months earlier that one of these days I'm going to rob that store, and if anyone gets in the way, I'm going to kill them.
Well, they're not really in the way, tied up in the basement.
No, they really weren't. Hours after that call was received, two teenage boys dumpster diving near Hill Air Force Base, where Selby and Andrews were stationed, discovered the victims' wallets and purses, and recognizing the pictures on the driver's licenses, called the police. A crowd of airmen quickly formed, including Selby and Andrews. The detective who responded to the scene, believing that the killers might be in the crowd, put on a show, speaking dramatically, waving each piece of evidence in the air as he removed them from the dumpster. He later noted in his report that out of all the airmen gathered around the dumpster, most of whom still stood still and watched in relative silence, two in particular paced around the crowd, spoke loudly, and made frantic gestures with their hands. Who does that?
People who apparently are like, hey, it's me, arrest me, I did it.
Like, what are you doing?
Like, for why?
The detective later identified these two airmen as Pierre and Andrews, and the detective later received an award from the Utah branch of the Department of Justice for his use of proactive techniques in this investigation.
That is very criminal minds of him.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that literally happen in that show a handful of times, so I'm kind of here for it.
Based on their reaction to the evidence being removed from the trash bin and the officer's implication of Andrews, they were taken into custody and a search warrant was issued for their barracks. They found flyers for the hi-fi shop and a rental contract for a unit at a public storage facility. They obtained a warrant for that storage unit where they discovered several pieces of stereo equipment, which were later identified from serial numbers to have been taken from the store.
They're not even smart. That's what really pisses me off is like the senselessness of it. These people are killing people, and for why? Because you got caught. Because you're dumb.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. During the course of removing the equipment from the storage unit, detective discovered the half-empty bottle of industrial drain cleaner that had been used on the hostages.
So they also were like, let's put all the evidence in here with the other evidence.
Based on the evidence, they were formally charged with the crimes. There was also a third person, Keith Roberts, charged. But there was another crime that Pierre was involved in. When he was new to the Air Force, he became a suspect in the murder of Sergeant Edward Jefferson, who was found in his apartment, murdered by a bayonet.
Not a bayonet.
The detective in charge of the case, Don Moore, pieced together what happened from witnesses and records. So on Sunday, October 1st, 1973, Dale Pierre had been at Jeffrey's apartment taping music.
There's a lot of rapping and taping music.
Yeah, I'm concerned.
Mixing beats, perhaps.
When Jefferson discovered that his car keys were missing, although Pierre and Jefferson thoroughly searched the house, the keys remained missing. It wasn't until the next day that they were found. It seems that Pierre swiped the keys and brought them to the base for duplication. When Jefferson's car keys and apartment key were duplicated, he signed the name Curtis Alexander in an attempt to conceal the fact that he had stolen them. When he returned to Jefferson's apartment the next day to help him find the keys, they miraculously reappeared. He immediately became suspicious of Pierre and changed the locks to his apartment and changed his ignition. Okay, that seems like a lot. To change your whole car ignition.
Just suspicious because somebody got your keys. But I guess because he got the key to the car ignition, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When confronted by Jefferson, Pierre denied everything. Sometime during the hours of 10 p.m. on Thursday, October 4th, and 4 a.m. on Friday, October 5th, Jefferson was murdered with a bayonet.
Which is a military-issued weapon.
The perpetrator of that crime had jammed the long knife with such ferocity into his face and head that only the handle could be seen.
This guy has a rage issue, I feel.
Yeah. After interviewing dozens of witnesses and after researching the name of Curtis Alexander, Detective Don Moore came to the conclusion that Pierre had murdered Jefferson. However, there was not enough evidence to arrest or convict him.
No.
And the case remained unsolved.
I see.
Until he was brought to trial for these murders. William Andrews, on the other hand, had a pretty normal childhood and was a well-behaved child, by all accounts. He joined the Air Force in 1973 and was also assigned to Hill Air Force Base as a mechanic for helicopters. At Hill, the two men became friends, but none of the other Air Force men wanted anything to do with them because of his, or especially Pierre, because of his attitude. Andrews had quite a few friends, but they drifted away when he became close with Pierre. And in March of 1974, both men filed for separation from the Air Force. To their commanding officer, it seemed that Andrews was basically following Pierre, who had uncontrollable rage, and led the two. Pierre, Andrews, and Roberts were tried jointly for first-degree murder and robbery. Pierre and Andrews were convicted of all charges and sentenced to death. Roberts was convicted only of robbery and was sentenced to imprisonment. During the trial, it was revealed that Pierre and Andrews had robbed the store with the intention of killing anyone they came across, and in the months prior to the robbery, had been looking for a way to commit the murders quietly and cleanly. The two then saw the film Magnum Force, in which a prostitute is forced to drink Drano and is then shown immediately dropping dead.
So, these dumb motherfuckers, A, were there to kill people because you preemptively got your Drano, but you really thought that somebody was going to drink a poison and that was going to drop dead immediately?
Mm-hmm.
Just because TV told you so?
Mm-hmm. They decided it would be an efficient method of murder and decided to use it for their crime.
Perfect.
Orrin Walker and Courtney were the star witnesses for prosecution. Both testified on the stand in spite of her brain damage and his mutilated throat.
Courtney's a boy.
His brain damage and his mutilated throat.
The whole time you were reading the story, I was like, I kept having to tell myself, Courtney a boy. I know it doesn't matter like that, but like, it does because he was a boy, but...
Yes.
The point is, I wasn't judging you. I was hyper aware because the whole time I was like, Courtney the boy, Courtney the boy.
Following the issuing of death sentences, the NAACP demanded that Pierre and Andrews' sentences be reduced to life with the possibility of parole, claiming that Pierre and Andrews had been unfairly convicted since they were both black and the victims and jury were all white. Andrews was quick to accuse the judicial system of racism following the NAACP's request for reduced sentences. And in an interview with USA Today, he claimed that he had never intended to kill anyone, and that this was later rebutted when detectives cited a statement by Andrews in which he admitted being the one to purchase the drain cleaner and bring it to the store on the night of the killings.
Correct. You literally just got done saying how you saw a movie that somebody died like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm done with them.
I mean, you can't blame people for shooting their shot. They don't want to go to jail, but...
Nasty.
You should have maybe not committed crimes.
Yeah.
I believe in you.
Yeah. They became notoriously hated prisoners, even amongst the black population. They were particularly reviled.
Yeah, that's a real word.
I know, but it just didn't sound right in the moment. On death row.
They're particularly hated.
Yeah. Especially by Gary Gilmore, whose final words to his fellow inmates before being taken to the firing squad were, "I'll see you in hell, Pierre and Andrew."
Somebody's literally going to line up and get shot after the firing squad. They're like, "I'll see you in hell, motherfuckers."
Jesus Christ.
Imagine.
I think they have problems.
You gotta respect somebody who's in jail for, like, a heinous crime, who's like, yeah, but not that heinous crime.
Yeah, no. They were both put to death by lethal injection, Pierre on August 28th, 1987, and Andrews 5 years later in 1992.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Jesus. These murders are still seen as some of the worst crimes ever committed in the state of Utah. It's actually taught to FBI trainees at the Academy in Quantico, Virginia, and was included as a sample case in the FBI's crime classification manual.
That does make sense, considering the profile-building tactics they used of getting them to act out at the one thing.
Yeah. The other side of... This, okay. Courtney's story became the basis for the book, The Other Side of Murder by Gary Kinder. This book was viewed by many as pioneering because it was the first true crime book that focused on the victim of a violent crime rather than the criminals.
That's really cool.
Courtney suffered chronic pain for the rest of his life until his death on June 4th, 2002 at the age of 44 due to his brain damage.
That's awful.
That sucks.
Because he was only 16, right, you said?
I think so. He was forced to drop out of college and had to apply for Social Security assistance because of just everything.
That's really sad.
Orrin Walker, the other victim, of course, he died on February 13th, 2000. So that's great.
I mean, I'm glad that, you know, two people lived, but, like, at what cost? He watched his kid be killed and a bunch of people be tortured, and you have such severe brain damage, like, yeah. You can't have a normal life.
Yeah, no. But, yeah.
Oh, is that it?
I mean, the crime is obviously notorious for its extreme violence.
I've definitely heard of it before, but I never really knew of the details. Like, I remember always hearing hi-fi murders, and, like, seeing that. Apparently the AC in this page.
Well, it's because I closed the vent completely because I'm always cold. Freezing at all times, and so he just turned the air down, probably.
Oh, he was like, "I got you, babe. Let me just close your air vent."
No, I did it.
Oh, I thought you said he did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you were like, "Fuck that guy. I closed my own air vent." Sorry, guys. She closed her own air vent.
Thank you. I did. But now, as you can see, it sounds like the wind gusting through a million tunnels.
We'll just go. Bye.
Okay, bye.